Welcome to the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin. Joining me is Lou Charbonneau, Director of UN Affairs at Human Rights Watch. Lou, why is Russia so concerned about entry points to Syria from Turkey? Humanitarian assistance is humanitarian assistance, isn't it?
I wish Russia saw it that way. Unfortunately, the lives and safety of civilians in northern Syria don't seem to be a high priority for Russia. It's much more interested in sending a message that somehow Syria is in control of its entire territory, which simply isn't the case, and that it is the sole sovereign ruler of this entire area. They don't like aid coming from Turkey directly over the border into northwest Syria or coming from Iraq into northeast Syria, because that's an acknowledgement that somehow the Syrian government isn't in control and they don't like that. Over the past few years, as Syria has increasingly regained control of large parts of its territory with Russia's help, they've decided that the cross-border mandate, which enables millions of Syrians to survive, is not necessary. Of course, there is no humanitarian justification for ending these border points. They got rid of two of the four border crossings first approved in 2014, back in January, and this has had a disastrous impact on northeast Syria. No one could have foreseen the spread of COVID-19 around the world, let alone in Syria. We don't know how bad the situation is. We know that the disease is there, that it's affected people, and that they are hopelessly unprepared for dealing with it. They don't have the infrastructure. The border crossing that Russia shut down in January by threatening to veto out of existence the entire cross-border mandate was the crossing that the World Health Organization used to bring in medical aid, supplies, and personnel into northeast Syria. That's gone. We have not been able to see any kind of substantial compensation for that border crossing. People are at risk. They don't have the ability to test people. Hospitals are not functioning. So it's really a disastrous situation. And if they reduce the border crossings as Russia wants from 2 to 1 in the northwest, it will make an already catastrophic situation even more disastrous.
Crossing points from Iraq and Jordan have already been blocked for such aid. Who blocked them and why? And doesn't the Security Council have a say there as well?
It was Russia, with the backing of China, that blocked the border crossings from Jordan and Iraq back in January. Russia was the main culprit. China is providing diplomatic support. They have a kind of you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours relationship on the council. When China needs Russia to cover it on issues like Myanmar or North Korea, then Russia is there for China, and vice versa on the issues that matter most to Moscow. Unfortunately, the Security Council isn't able to do anything if Russia rejects it because it has a veto, as does China, like the United States and Britain and France. They're permanent Security Council members, and these five of the 15 council members are able to block anything. So if you do want a UN Security Council mandate, then you need to get all five permanent members of the council to at least not vote no. They have to at least abstain. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to do this with Russia. It is determined to prevent, it seems, any kind of sustained cross-border humanitarian mechanism. They don't like it. They think that it undermines Syrian sovereignty. And the rest of the council really can't do anything other than try and persuade Russia to see reason to think about the lives that could be lost or that will be lost, instead of focusing on political calculations and sending a signal of support to the government of President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus.
You are listening to Lou Charbonneau, Director for UN Affairs at Human Rights Watch. How much monthly assistance has entered Syria through the two existing entry points from Turkey? What kind of aid is it? Who distributes it? Who receives it?
There have been nearly 30,000 trucks that have come in since 2014 up until recently at one of the crossings, Bab al-Hawa, and then Bab al-Salam, there have been nearly 5,000 trucks, and each of these trucks has many tons of aid. The assistance that people rely on are mainly food, but also medicines, shelter, often tents, because people who are internally displaced persons have moved to sometimes tent areas or they're living in partially demolished buildings. They need sanitation. Often the water doesn't work, so they've got to clean themselves, hygiene, psychosocial support, essential household items that many of us take for granted, but also education and ways of providing protection for children. There are so many children in Syria who need help. There are over 13 million people in Syria out of a population before the war that was just over 20 million that are in need of humanitarian assistance. Most of those are in the non-government held areas. They're the ones who have the most acute needs and really rely on aid to survive. And the UN does its own distribution through agencies like UNICEF, the World Food Program, the World Health Organization, but they also work with international partners, international non-governmental organizations that are implementing partners for the UN, and they all work together. They have a network with a division of labor. So when you have so many people, over 13 million people that are in need, I mean, to cut off one of the main aid portals for so many of these people, we're talking 5-6 million in northwest Syria alone, it could have a catastrophic impact. People will die. It is a virtual death sentence for so many people there. Russia and the Syrian government have said that the Syrian government can compensate for the loss of any border crossings from Turkey, that cross-line aid coming from Damascus will be sufficient. Well, the Syrian government has a track record of obstructing and preventing aid to opposition-held areas. So there is no reason to think that they would be changing this approach anytime soon.
Lou Charbonneau, thank you for joining me at the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin.